3. Paris and Versailles, France, 1630 AD. Unlike Scotland, France was a country Ransley could get behind. He leaned back in the bed with satisfaction, watching the attractive couple writhing in front of him through heavy-lidded eyes. The French, it turned out, were a practical people, despite their penchant for Baroque frippery in matters of art and architecture. The weather here was good, the sex was good, even the food was supposedly good. Not that he was in a position to judge such things personally these days. Antoine and Colette were certainly a charming pair, and he wasn't just saying that because of the rather extraordinary thing Colette was currently doing with her tongue. He'd met them the previous day at a salon run by the delightfully intimidating Madame de Chapelle, who had a fondness for riding crops and a decidedly piquant vintage of blood running through her veins. By contrast, his current companions were wonderfully soft and sweet. He'd fallen into conversation with them for hours, before subsequently falling into a bottle of wine. As the wine flowed, Ransley learned that the pair had been matched at a young age by their parents for political reasons, but had quickly grown to be fast friends. Antoine's sexual tastes, however, ran more toward the male of the species than the female. Out from under their family's watchful eyes, they'd made their situation work in a way Ransley found admirable. Antoine had a lover. Colette had a lover. Everyone was happy, except for a single problem. The couple wanted a child. More to the point, Colette wanted it to be Antoine's child, specifically. And Antoine wanted to indulge her. Fortunately, Colette's practicality extended to Antoine's predilections, and she had not been shocked by frank talk about the matter. Indeed, she'd looked positively intrigued by some of Ransley's suggestions. If anyone, it had been Antoine whose cheeks had grown a bit rosy. So it was that today the three of them had reconvened in Ransley's rooms for the purpose of falling into a bed, where he found himself with a beautiful woman moaning around his cock, while an equally beautiful invert pounded into her gamely from behind, his eyes fastened squarely on Ransley's face the whole time. Ransley tended to gravitate more toward women in the general course of things, though he'd sampled the pleasures of both sexes over the centuries, along with a handful of lovers who hadn't fit neatly into either category. Therefore, it was no hardship to hold Antoine's smoky gaze while keeping up a litany of praise and encouragement that might have been directed at either of his partners.
"That's it. Keep going. You feel marvelous, darling. You're doing so well."
His fingers stroked rhythmically through Colette's hair, thumbs stretching down to brush her temple tenderly. Meanwhile, Antoine stared at him like Ransley was life itself, his cupid's bow lips parting as he plowed his wife, and presumably pretended he was plowing Ransley instead. Ransley was just settling into the pleasant floating sensation of truly exceptional fellatio when the locked door to his rooms unexpectedly crashed open and an angry fay stalked in. Colette yelped, jerking away from his cock like she'd been burned. Antoine yelped and came inside her like a runaway carriage. Which was one mission accomplished, at least. Ransley, meanwhile, groaned in heartfelt frustration upon recognizing the fay's stupid, smug face.
"Really?"
he asked, a bit plaintively. His long-ago acquaintance from Ireland and Scotland gave him a look of thinly veiled disgust. Ransley's guests had already scrambled off the bed and were hastily putting themselves to rights. One saving grace of the situation being that it was still midday, and none of them had been of a mind to disrobe more than necessary. Ransley sighed, and willed his erection down as best he could while tucking himself away.
"What is the meaning of this, sir?"
Antoine demanded, the heat burning from his pale cheeks taking away somewhat from his attempt at a commanding tone. Still, Ransley gave him points for having immediately placed Colette behind him for protection. He turned to glare at the Fae, his fangs lengthening and his eyes flashing blue fire out of the human's line of sight.
"Oh, don't be alarmed, you two. My friend here has clearly forgotten his manners. I believe he was just leaving."
The Fae glared back.
"Don't be absurd. I've hardly subjected myself to this disgusting scene of debauchery, only to leave without what I need."
He glanced around the room, retrieved Ransley's doublet and heavy leather coat, and threw them at him.
"Get dressed. We must depart immediately."
Ransley caught the clothing, feeling a sense of surreality joining the expected outrage. He gestured between them with a finger.
"Ah, I'm surprised I have to spell this out, but there is no we here."
The infuriating Fae turned his attention on the young couple still standing nervously by the bed.
"You, humans, you wish to leave now that you've completed your offensive debauchery. Go."
"Not all of us were finished being debauched, you realize," Ransley pointed out, quite reasonably, he thought. But it was too late. Antoine and Colette exchanged a glance, both of them looking faintly dazed.
Yes, Antoine said. "Well, my dear, we should probably be going now. Thank you for a most enjoyable few hours, monsieur."
Colette smiled in a distracted manner.
"Yes, thank you.
Should the day's activities bear fruit, shall we say? We will name the child after you if it's a boy."
Ransley blinked at her, the unnatural light leaving his eyes.
"Good Lord, please don't do such a thing to an innocent babe on my account."
The pair smiled vacantly at him, as though he'd made a mildly embarrassing joke. The Fae stood aside as they retrieved their cloaks and exited through the open door, chatting quietly to each other. They disappeared into the hallway without a backward glance. Ransley raised a slow eyebrow at his uninvited guest.
"Right. Start talking, and make it good."
The Fae waved a hand at the clothing Ransley was still holding, urging him wordlessly to dress.
"There is an imminent plot against Cardinal Richelieu,"
he said, as Ransley reluctantly shrugged on the doublet and began lacing it up.
"Marie de Medici has convinced her son, Louis XIII, to remove him from power. The king has just done so, and retired immediately afterward to the chateau at Versailles for solitude." "So all of this is my problem?"
"Why, exactly?" Ransley asked, again, quite reasonably. The Fae looked at him as though Ransley were mentally deficient.
"Because I need to stop it, which will require being in two places at once."
Ransley's fingers paused in their lacing.
"And I ask again, why on earth would you assume that I'd care?"
The Fae sighed.
"The court requires Richelieu to stay in power for now. Otherwise, his ouster will destabilize France at an inconvenient time. Your demon masters also need Richelieu to stay in power, because he supports the Protestant Dutch and Swedes. I prefer the term allies to masters, Ransley said mildly, if you don't mind. Whereas I prefer to deal with reality rather than fantasy, the Fae retorted without missing a beat. But the fact remains, neither side wants the cardinal cast out, and that is precisely what will happen if you don't shift your blood-sucking arse.
Ransley pondered the words for a few moments and shrugged. Fair enough. But I'm adding this to the ledger, along with the ruined jerkin you still owe me. So, what's the plan? And do I have to worry about you trying to kill me at any point during this venture?
That would be rather counterproductive, given that I need your help.
Ransley rolled his eyes.
What about after I've rendered assistance? I shouldn't care to comment on the matter.
Of course not, Ransley said, resigned. He shrugged on his coat, fastened his sword belt, and retrieved his broad-brimmed hat with its stylish, sweeping plume of feathers.
So, plan. You will travel to the Luxembourg Palace, where you will convince Richelieu to follow the king to Versailles and plead his case, said the Fae. Meanwhile, I will ride ahead to Versailles and convince Louis to change his mind about his earlier decision to dismiss the cardinal.
Ransley considered that.
Very well. Though I suspect Marie de Medici won't think much of such a development, she'll be livid.
The Fae made a dismissive gesture.
Marie de Medici can go hang.
She still has power, you know, Ransley pointed out, sliding his hat onto his head. A sly smile tugged at one corner of the Fae's sensual lips.
For now, perhaps.
Ransley filed away that little piece of information for later, and settled his shoulders.
Whatever you say.
Shall we go? The Fae gestured him out first, and Ransley tried to ignore the prickle of his instincts at allowing an unseelie agent access to his unprotected back. But his companion merely closed the door with a decisive snick before leading the way down the stairwell of the boarding house.
How did you know where to find me in the first place? Ransley wondered aloud.
He received a dismissive scoff in reply.
Please. I've had you under surveillance since you arrived in France, Nightcrawler.
Well, Ransley said, that's vaguely disturbing.
My sex life since I've arrived has been noticeably more depraved than usual, you see. I'm painfully aware.
The Fae replied, in a tone that didn't invite additional conversation on the topic. They exited the building and turned toward the stable. The Fae shot a sidelong glance at him.
Can you acquire a horse?
Ransley made a face.
Only if I must. The beasts aren't generally very enamored of me. Really? I can't imagine why.
His companion replied, deadpan. He retrieved his own mount, a fine bay mare.
Hurry. As it is, you and Richelieu will be some hours behind the king. I should not like to let this situation languish longer than necessary. It won't take long before others start scrambling to fill the perceived power vacuum. Yes, fine.
Ransley agreed waspishly.
I'll meet you in Versailles with Richelieu, then? Quite, said the Fae. Do try not to bungle anything.
With that, he mounted and spurred his mare into a canter, disappearing into the warren of Parisian streets. You fall afoul of one pitchfork-wielding village mob, and afterward you never hear the end of it, Ransley muttered. Arsehole. With a disgusted shake of his head, he transformed into mist, heading for the Luxembourg Palace and one freshly disgraced cardinal. It took almost 3 hours, along with far more application of vampiric mesmerism than Ransley would normally care to use, before he emerged from the palace, flanked by half a dozen guards and trailing in Richelieu's wake. For a human, the man was frankly terrifying. But even the much-feared bloody cardinal, his Red Eminence, was susceptible to the right application of supernatural influence. Idly, Ransley wondered what Richelieu would make of the truth about his world, and the worlds adjacent to it. He'd almost been tempted to find out what that razor-sharp intellect would do with the knowledge, but this was not the time. And these were definitely not the circumstances. So, he'd limited himself to the task at hand. Namely, convincing Richelieu not to lie down quietly and be ground beneath Marie de Medici's pointed boot heel. On the positive side, once he set his mind to something, Richelieu was a force of nature. The small group of riders left in short order for the king's hunting lodge in Versailles, some 12 miles away. Ransley gritted his teeth and tightened the reins as his borrowed gelding skittered sideways beneath him, nervous of the predator on its back. As far as the cardinal and his retinue of guards were aware, he was merely a trusted adviser, newly arrived in Paris from Avignon, where Richelieu had briefly been banished some 12 years previously. The small group had been chosen for speed. Richelieu, it turned out, was not the frail cleric many pictured him to be. He had been in the military once upon a time, and he was quite capable of sitting a horse. Rather than hiding away in a carriage, he was riding with the rest of them, grim-faced and focused. Their pace was brisk, and within 2 hours they were approaching their destination. The crowded environs of Paris had given way to open space, woods and meadows ripe for hunting. Versailles was a retreat for the rich and powerful, but was not in itself a powerful town. It was small, home to a priory, an inn, a few chateaux, and not much else. For that reason, the sound of many human heartbeats hidden out of sight in the woods ahead of them was definite cause for concern. Ransley pulled his unhappy mount to a halt, listening. Sure enough, the moment he did so, a dozen armed men came charging out from the trees.
Ambush!
Ransley called, drawing his sword. Before any move could be made to get the cardinal under cover, several of the attackers aimed flintlocks at them and fired. Ransley felt a hot ball of lead tear through his upper arm, only to start healing immediately afterward. Two of the other guards weren't so lucky. One screamed, curling forward in the saddle, while another slid from his horse, hit the ground, and lay still. Ransley kicked his feet free of the stirrups and vaulted off his mount, knowing he'd be more effective at fighting while not also having to control the panicked beast. It galloped off, clearly glad of any excuse to get away from him. Richelieu's surviving guards formed up in front of their charge and returned fire, dropping 3 of the attacking force. With no time to reload on either side, the attackers ran at them, the two sides meeting in a clash of blade on blade. Richelieu's mount reared, but he brought it under control one-handed and drew a jewel-encrusted dagger from his belt. It wasn't much of a weapon against attacking swordsmen, so Ransley placed himself near the cleric as a last line of defense. Unsurprisingly, it didn't take long for one of the would-be assassins to get past the mounted guards. Ransley dispatched him in short order and plucked the sword from the dying man's grip. "Your Eminence!" he shouted, before tossing the weapon to the cardinal hilt first. Though it had been some time ago, Richelieu's stint in the military had evidently not been for show alone. Ransley heard the slap of sword hilt against palm, and when he glanced behind him, Richelieu was wielding it like someone who knew which end was the pointy one. Another of the cardinal's guards fell, and two assassins slipped through the gap. Ransley crashed into one, getting inside his guard and slamming his sword hilt against his opponent's temple with devastating force. He turned, hearing the ring of steel against steel as Richelieu fought for his life, only to find a third man thrusting a sword straight toward his heart. Caught off guard, Ransley parried the lunge clumsily. The blade slid between his lower ribs, piercing his left lung. He stared down at it, open-mouthed, before glaring at the offending swordsman.
"Damn it, man," he said, wheezing a bit around the words. "This was my best doublet."
The swordsman appeared rightly taken aback by Ransley's unwillingness to scream, cough up blood, and fall down dead. That was enough of an opportunity for him to trap his opponent's sword arm and slice his own blade across the man's throat. Hot red liquid spattered across his cheek and jaw. It was a pity there were so many witnesses, he thought, as he yanked the man's rapier free of his ribs and tossed it aside. All the blood flying around was making him rather peckish. Surreptitiously, he swiped a finger through the gore coating the side of his face and licked it clean. Behind him, Richelieu had managed to send his opponent to the ground with what looked like a non-critical shoulder wound. Ransley let the downed man be, since it might be useful to interrogate him if he lived. Around them, the three surviving mounted guards seemed to be mopping things up nicely. Ransley caught an assassin who stumbled toward him, already badly injured, and ran him through. The assassin slid off his blade with a groan and fell to the ground, limp. Silence settled across the battle site, broken only by the occasional moan of an injured man.
"This was Marie's doing," Richelieu said, his voice a dangerous hiss. "I will see that woman stripped of her power if I have to tear France apart to do it."
"That's the spirit, mate," Ransley told him, frowning down at the ragged tear in his doublet. "She really is a bit of a bitch, by all accounts." He stiffened, whirling to face the road ahead as hoofbeats approached from the distance, a single horse at full gallop. He recognized the faint tingle of otherworldliness at the same moment he recognized the bay mare. Ransley lowered his sword, but maintained his wary stance as Albigard galloped toward them.
"There is to be an ambush,"
the fae shouted as soon as he was within hearing range.
"We must—"
He clattered up to them and reined in his horse, taking in the carnage.
"Oh, never mind."
"Are you fucking kidding me?" Ransley asked in disbelief. "You useless, green-eyed, pointy-eared—" "You owe me a new doublet now."
He gestured at the red-stained hole in the fabric over his chest. The fey bastard ignored him, instead turning to Richelieu, who was unharmed and still mounted.
"Your Eminence, I am gratified to find you safe. His Majesty King Louis extends his deepest regrets for his hasty words earlier. He wishes to meet with you as soon as possible. Allow me to escort you the rest of the way to the chateau.
The cardinal, a bit breathless but otherwise enviably unruffled, nodded.
Very well. I am pleased to hear that His Majesty has reconsidered. Perhaps someone can be sent back here to deal with the dead and wounded.
After a few minutes of organizing the guards that were well enough to ride the short remaining distance to the chateau, they left two who were uninjured to watch over the battle site until additional help could be sent. In the end, Ransley found himself riding double behind an insufferable fey bastard who now owed him 2 pieces of clothing and an orgasm. The fey bastard in question didn't seem much more pleased by this state of affairs than Ransley did, mind you. Not that Ransley could really blame him. He'd noted earlier what an uncomfortable feeling it was to have a potential enemy at one's back. And, well, there was also the matter of Ransley's presence making his mare act up abominably. They rode in stony silence, eventually reaching the king's hunting lodge, where Louis was almost pathetically eager to recant his earlier words and beg Richelieu's forgiveness. The wee hours of the morning found the entire lodge engaged in an impromptu celebration of the miraculous reconciliation between church and crown. Somehow, Ransley found himself stretched out in a comfortable chair before the fire, with a fey arsehole sipping wine in the chair next to him.
"Well, that was tiresome," he observed. "The next time you need assistance in such a matter, break into someone else's rooms."
The fey gave him a small salute with his cup.
"If it means avoiding such a stomach-turning scene of degenerate vice, rest assured, I shall."
Ransley nodded, mollified.
"See that you do. Oh, and what's your name, by the way? Once someone's vomited on you and seen you with your cock being sucked, it seems as though you should at least know what to call them."
The fae swirled his drink, and for a moment Ransley thought he wouldn't answer.
"I am Albigard of the Unseelie," he said at length.
"Ransley Thorpe," Ransley returned, "though I can't precisely say it's a pleasure to meet you properly."
"Same,"
Albigard said.
"And I'm already perfectly aware of your name, Bloodsucker."
Ransley shrugged a shoulder.
"Because you've been keeping me under surveillance." "Right. Makes sense. Well, I suppose, if nothing else, this day goes to show that our two sides can work together for the greater good when it's called for."
Albigard gazed into the crackling flames, his expression distant.
"Don't get used to it," he said,
and took another sip of wine.